The Melbourne Cup Carnival has a history like no other in this country. The four-day format for this magical week was established way back in 1875, the same year the Melbourne Cup was held on that first Tuesday in November. Since then, the carnival has adopted a few changes, some big, some small. It's produced sporting moments that will never be forgotten, from Farlap to Mackay Diva, and it's battled through wars and depression. But this year, it will be a carnival like no other. Hello, I'm Gareth Hall, and welcome to the VRC Melbourne Cup Carnival Preview Podcast.
But it's Doremus nicely clear in the Melbourne Cup. He's got the cup won. He's holding nothing like a Dane, and Doremus wins the cup.
Light Fingers the leader. Galilee's got a split and is flying after them. Galilee races to Light Fingers at the furlong. He's hit the front and he's got the cup won, Galilee.
American Trevian.
Allsop and Rain Lover. Rain Lover and Allsop. They're going head and head. Rain Lover on the inside. Rain Lover's got his neck in front and won by a neck.
It's Central Park and Rogan Josh. Central Park, Rogan Josh. Bart's got his 11th. Rogan Josh wins the cup from Central Park.
Bars for Reality just in front. Bauer Declare kicks. Bauer Declare's won it for Australia. They're on top of the world.
Yes, you are with Gareth Hall, and it's time to welcome in the team for the 2020 VRC Melbourne Cup Carnival Podcast. And our first member is the VRC General Manager of Racing in Lee Jordan. And Lee, I say hello to you, and it is a different year, isn't it? Like, this carnival's battled through wars, depressions, and now we're battling through a pandemic. And as I mentioned in that introduction, it will be a carnival like no other.
Yeah, Gareth, great to be on and good to chat with you and Matt and Dean. But it's a different year. Just thinking, like, leading into the carnival, we're sort of all doing things that are different because obviously we don't have a crowd and now we don't have owners as well. So you're sort of preparing in a different way. And it is the area I've been fortunate enough to go to the meetings during COVID-19. And it's quite weird because obviously no crowd. And one thing that really stands out, you can hear everything during a race, you know, the horses galloping, the whips cracking. And the thing that really strikes me is the jockeys are screaming at their charges to get them over the line, which is just amazing. But no, it's a different year, but you know, the quality's there coming into the week and really looking forward to it.
It's a great privilege and honour to have the great man Dean Lester, who is the greatest form analyst in the game, but he's a wonderful historian as well when it comes to the racing game. And Dino, you would have so many great memories during a Melbourne Cup carnival. Hello to you.
Yeah, hello, Gareth. Great to be with you and the team. And yeah, look, the Melbourne Cup week, there's like no other. And it's what we look forward to each year. It's, you know, within those that work within the industry, it's probably the toughest week of the year, but still, that's what we do it for. And you look forward to it every year.
And Matty Stewart, of course, the chief racing writer here at RSN. How many cup carnivals have you covered?
I was thinking about it the other day. I watched Jeune from Mum and Dad's place on the couch, so obviously I wasn't involved, you know, constantly then. So, but I reckon it wasn't far after that. So, oh, probably the same as Dean. I think it starts with a three.
Yeah.
It's just as Dean said. Then the 4 days. It's always like a constant show reel, Dean, isn't it? The 4 days all close together and something like 36 races or something like that. It's a show reel week of constant action, isn't it? Cup week.
Yeah, it is, and probably within the racing bubble, you have to go back and look at it a month later to really absorb it. Those that enjoy the week, enjoy the social aspect of it, but you know, enjoy the punt as well, probably take it in more. You're just trying to get your job done, but then you look back. You know, I always tape it on the IQ, and about a month later, go back and watch what we've seen because you want to absorb it and you want to take it in. But in the moment, it's pretty hectic.
I think it's the greatest day on the Australian racing calendar, Derby Day. And you have a look at the races. You start off with the Carbine Club Stakes and then into the Wakeful Stakes, the Hotham Stakes, horses trying to get into the Melbourne Cup, the Group 1 race for the Mares, the Empire Rose, the Coolmore Stud Stakes, the Victoria Derby, the Cantala, of course, moved from the last day to the first day, swapping around with the McKinnon, and then the Furphy Sprint. To conclude the program, I'll go to you first of all here, Lee. It's been a couple of years now since you've made that change with the McKinnon and the Cantala. Do you think it's working at the moment?
Yeah, Gareth, I think the McKinnon, you know, used to be off 10 years ago, maybe, you know, when Bart was using it as a bit of a lead into the Melbourne Cup. I think most people refer to it as the most expensive Group 1 trial in the country. I just think in the latter years, it just didn't fit well on Derby Day. It was sort of, and it was a week after the Cox Plate, but going on the final day, I know there was a few critics in the first year, but I think the race is really developing. And this year, I mean, hopefully we'll see Armoury, that ran second to Sir Dragon A, come onto the race. You know, Melody Bell is coming over from New Zealand, and she holds the record now in New Zealand, the most amount of Group 1s ever won in New Zealand, which is a great record. She's coming just for the race. Acadia Queen hopefully will come on. Holmesman was great the other day. I'm sure he'll be there. 50 Stars looking to back up. Fierce Impact. So, you know, and there's probably a three-year-old that will come through as well. So I think the race now is starting to really develop. And actually, over the spring, depending on how this shapes up, it could end up being one of the races of the spring. So, no, I think it's doing its job. And, I mean, my view and our club's view is to keep developing the race and, you know, to be one of the, you know, highlight grand final championships over the carnival.
And, Dino, I love listening to you when it comes to race programming. Do you think the VRC have got it right with moving the McKinnon?
I think the 2,000 metre at Flemington is the best distance and track in Australia. It's just a fair contest, and we see it in the Australian Cup every year, and we see it now in the McKinnon. And I think it's great the way they've developed that. I do miss that little bit of intrigue of watching horses run on the Saturday getting ready for the Tuesday. I miss that a bit, but you get it in the Hotham Stakes with regard to that they have to win to get in virtually. So you still get that to a degree, but it's a better race for being moved to 2 weeks after the Cox Plate.
Leo, I guess the relationship with the Cox Plate is always going to be interesting, isn't it? Like the individual ambitions of the VRC against sort of Moonee Valley. Moonee Valley would like to see the Cox Plate as the grand final of the Cox Plate horses, you know, historically and annually. But the VRC is entitled to have its own ambitions with the McKinnon as well. I guess in an ideal world, there'd be some sort of relationship between both races as seen as a pair of Group 1 championships. Is it a sort of an individual aim with the McKinnon, or is it always seen in the context of the Cox Plate as well?
Yeah, no, I think there's room for both, Matty. I think at the club we're very much on, you know, the four pillars. The four pillars being the sprint, the mile, our 2,000 metre weight for age and a staying event. So I think our aim will always be to develop that four-pillar relationship and really to sort of be the championship. You know, Flemington here, the 4 days, it should be, you know, the championships. And that's how we want to, it won't be titled that, but that's sort of our aim from a racing angle. So obviously we want to pour more money, prize money into those pillar races. And that's not a neglect of our champion three-year-old races as well. It becomes a whole package. But that's where we see it. So yes, every club has their individual aim, but we see the McKinnon as we want to develop it. We want to make it a world-class event, and I think it's heading that way.
You're with Gareth Hall, Lee Jordan, Matty Stewart, and the great Dean Lester here on the 2020 VRC Melbourne Cup Carnival podcast. Hey, Dino, when you look at Derby Day, do you think that the Derby's still the highlight on the opening day?
It should be. It's a window of opportunity. You know, there's a lot spoken about whether it should be distance shortened and those sort of things. And I'm very firm in the opinion it should stay as it is, because it gives that early maturing three-year-old the chance to win a big race. You know, it's like the Golden Slipper. Like if you're up and about at that stage of your life, you shouldn't be penalised for it. And that, you know, I think is for the young stayer. And on Saturday, we haven't got a standard. We haven't got a Guineas winner progressing on. I mean, I can remember the days of, you know, a horse like Grosvenor, Cossack Prince and Velosa. They went through the spring champion, the Caulfield Guineas, and onto the Derby. So they were a group of three great three-year-olds, and they went right through. This year, don't have anything like that, but still a chance for a horse that's mature enough, bred to do it, and get the money early doors.
What do you say to the horse people like Danny O'Brien, Dino, that say, well, these horses aren't quite, they're not quite ready yet for a 2,500 metre contest at this level so early on in their career?
I say he's got a lot of runners in it for someone that doesn't think it's a contest for those sort of horses.
I knew you would say that, Lee. The feedback, you're the racing manager with the VRC, you get this question, and we talk about this nearly every year. Your message to the trainers and the horse people out there, will you ever change the distance of the VRC Derby?
You're right, Gareth, we do talk about this every year. That's definitely spot on. And look, yeah, I saw a poll last night taken on. It was 50-50. It was, divided down the middle, and that's probably a pretty good reflection. There's some people that wanted to stay as is, some that want to reduce it. I've looked at this year, and, I mean, the form lines coming into this race were probably the same as the last 2 years, through the Amy Vars, through the Norman Robinson. The Geelong Classic winner's not there, and it's not because they don't want to be there. It's because they hadn't paid up along the way, and maybe that's something we need to look at with the entry closing and the acceptance levels. But and we don't know how good Jerry Tortoni is, or young Werther. I mean, he's lightly raced. Warnings in the cup on Tuesday with a really good chance. Mamie Bound won the Oaks. She's in super form. So the club are very comfortable where it is, but obviously we're not set in stone. We'll always review and take in feedback, but it is very divided.
It's a bit more difficult with horses, what I'm about to say, fellas, but it rings true for sport that sometimes you want to see athletes pushed a bit outside their comfort zone as well to see where the depth of stamina and tenacity and character is as well. I know that sounds a bit airy-fairy, but not everything can be comfortable, Lee, and sometimes you do have to stretch the athlete to see what they're made of, and I think that's what a spring derby tends to do. I'm genuinely in no corner at all. I see arguments, merit in both arguments, but you don't always want it to be comfortable, do you?
Yeah, no, you're right, Matty. And as you said, the club are very happy where it is at 2,500. We're not set in stone. We're not rigid. Of course, we'll review. But you're right. And I think the horses, look, you can pick at every race and go, they haven't gone on or the form line, whatever. But as I said, Cherry Tortoni, Alvarado, we've got a great story there in Johnny Get Angry with Dennis Pagan having his first derby starter, and Danny's horses, young Werther, etc. So, look, let's wait and see how it pans out this year. Let's see what comes out of it. But I think it's a fascinating race, to be honest with you. On Saturday, it'll be interesting to see what goes on, because I think there could be varying tactics too. So, it's all good debate.
Dino, I've become fascinated with the story of the American Triple Crown winners, and one of the reasons why it's so fascinating if a horse can win all three is because the series of three races doesn't actually make a lot of sense with the staggered distances and so on. And I think that this also relates, Lee and guys, to the argument about should the Cox Plate be in front of the Caulfield Cup. But because they are in reverse, it makes it a tougher challenge to zigzag a bit and try and pull it off. And, Dino, I think that's kind of a little bit consistent with this derby debate, is whether it should be make absolute perfect sense or whether it should actually sort of stretch their limits a little bit further.
The club have invested $2 million in it. If a horse wins that race, that's a career. I mean, it's not... If a horse doesn't go on, so be it. If it does... Like, overseas, they win a derby and they can be retired off, so you don't know if they're any good or not. They're just retired off. So I think this argument that you've got to go on, if a horse wins a Golden Slipper and doesn't train on, it doesn't matter. It's done its job. That's what it was bred to do. And if it's to be a strong early season three-year-old and you're strong enough to do it, you should be rewarded.
It's the story of that horse's career, isn't it? Yeah,
that's right. Yep. I mean, you look at a horse like Nothing Like a Dane, who then 3 days later could run second in a Melbourne Cup. That's not what wrecked his career. He came back and he won first up. It was when he ran in the Australian Cup in a hard second up run that really probably took him over the edge. But you can certainly train on.
Yeah, and do you think that we'll see? Why don't we see Dano more horses do that quick back up from the Derby to the Melbourne Cup now? Does that surprise you?
Well, they've got to enter now. The late entry clause is no longer there, so they've got to enter. And we did have an entry this year, Lee. I think Elcione was entered by Godolphin.
You're right, Dean Elsiehan was the only one.
I think the international wave has made the task that little bit harder to try as often, Lee.
You mean like for trying to get into the
field? The three-year-old taking on half a field of very good internationals is a lot more daunting than it was before the international era, maybe, for the Derby winner.
Yeah, probably. And I think probably what we're saying is, you know, it's their grand final, the Derby. Three-year-old just turning three. I think that's probably... I know there's examples in the past where they're backed up, which Dean's just raised them. But I think, look, if they want to enter and go through the nomination stage, do that. And I think it's fine the way the structure is.
And the other thing is that with the three-year-olds being entered from the start, they're very close to weight for age, where some of these horses are well underweight for age. The older horses, more experienced. So it is a very hard task for a three-year-old with the more compressed scale to do it.
Saturday... Like over the last couple of years, I think nearly the most intriguing race in the build-up towards Derby Day, Dino, has been the Coolmore, because there's so much on the line with it's a stallion-making race now.
Well, the evolution of the race. I mean, it was, Derby Day 1980 had seven races. by 82, they'd added a race called the Black Douglas for the three-year-olds, and it was ultimately Rancher's last start, and he was beaten by Fiesta Star at about 3-1 on, and you just couldn't imagine that race was going to develop as it has through the journey on Derby Day. Yes, they swapped the histories of the Ascot Vale Stakes and that race, but to have this Group 1 elite contest, great forethought, and it is a fascinating race. And my fascination every year is that those trying to get the $20 million colt, or will a filly spoil the party like Sunlight did 2 years ago?
I love it when a gelding comes along, if it does come along to ruin the party as well, Dino. But hey, Lee, is that one of your most satisfying moments of recent times when you have a look at that Coolmore?
Yeah, and look, I've only been at the club for 2 years, so I'm definitely not going to go taking any credit that, you know, I got the race there. But the club's done a great job, I think, in developing that race. And I mean, when you look at it, you know, I mean, Glenfiddich and Ranting and Anders, and as you said, the Phillies September run, you know, swapped that. It's a lot of intrigue in this race on. And then you've got Farnham, you know. We don't know what's happening there. So it's a top shelf race, really. That's going to be fascinating to watch. And we've got 14 runners, which is great. And, the club's really done a good job on developing that race. It's a real centrepiece.
I love the positioning of the VRC office, Lee. I think your desk, I know that... Amanda Elliott's and I think Neil Wilson's, when you look out your window, you see straight up the straight, don't you? That must be there's so much history involved in your glimpse out the window there, isn't there?
Yeah, no, this is the number one spot. I mean, yeah, looking down the straight six, looking at the grandstand, a few clouds there, but I don't think there's much rain. But yeah, unfortunately, those grandstands are going to be empty, but I just love this spot. I just... I'm not going to say I'll be here till they put me 6 foot under, but it's not a bad spot to be. It's just a wonderful. I'm not actually hinting at anything. I'm feeling all right at the moment, but it is a great sight just to see that straight six. It's magnificent.
Just on the sight and just the, you know, in 2006, I think 463,000 people went through the gates over the 4 days at Flemington, and it was so popular that they had to rein the crowds in and so on. And Lee, I know it was down a bit last year, but as has been said often, the hint we got of the lack of crowds was felt at Caulfield and Moonee Valley, but the full gravity, this is the biggest sporting cultural festival in Australia consistently and over 4 days. It's we're going to notice the effect of coronavirus more at Cup Week, and it's going to make us look forward more to when normality resumes in 2021. But as you say, it's going to be a memorable, because it's a once in 150 year event, isn't it, this year?
Yeah, no, you're right, man. Actually, a lot of people have been saying we take plenty of photos, because, you know, in 5 years
they'll end up on walls. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, you're going to say, gee, this was what? That was the Cup. No one there. But, you know, we've obviously got photographers, so that'll happen. But it's just going to be fascinating. As I said before, you can hear everything that goes on. There'll obviously be a little bit more people in general, because there's a few more logistical things, but it's not going to be the same, there's no doubt. But, look, the club has done a lot off course to obviously engage punters and fans and the members. There's plenty of offers and punting things and trivia and all sorts of things. So, and the broad Channel 10, the studio they've built here near the Maccabi Diva stand is just something to behold. It's unbelievable. And when you see it in the broadcast, I think it's going to, it's really going to knock your socks off. It is. They've got a mega wall in there. Their studio is magnificent. They've invested a lot of money. And I think, I'd be interested to see your views after the 4 days, but I think their coverage is going to be A1. They've done a lot of work leading up to the coverage to have other things, other features, horse features, and obviously fashion and all those other things. So it's just going to be a really interesting 4 days, obviously on the track with the quality of racing, but also the broadcasting and what's happening off the track too.
Before we get on to Melbourne Cup Day, Dino, this is a little left field, this question, but have you, as a form analyst, sometimes when you have a look at your horses' profiles, and especially horses in the yard, do you think some horses have been suited with no crowds in a way that they become more relaxed and there's no pressure of the people around them?
Yeah, I think it's been really good for, say, a horse like Russian Camelot all the way through the spring. And conversely, probably the older, more laid-back horses, I think a few of the trainers and jockeys have mentioned that they've lacked the stimulation of not being pumped up by the crowd. So it's had effect probably two ways, but more so the more calming aspect of the spring for the horses.
This is, of course, the 2020 VRC Melbourne Cup Carnival Podcast with Gareth Hall, Dean Lester, Lee Jordan, and Matty Stewart. Let's talk about the Cup, the great race, the Lexus Melbourne Cup, to be run at 3 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon. Dean, I've had a chat to you on several occasions already about this Melbourne Cup, and you mentioned to me on Sunday that this is the championship, basically, of the spring racing carnival, with the Caulfield Cup, Cox Plate form lines coming together here for this great race on Tuesday. Have you seen it? This is one of the better Melbourne Cups of recent times. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, well, no one's dodging it, Gareth. That's the thing. You've got the Caulfield Cup winner, the Caulfield Cup runner-up, who originally Anthony Van Dyck was thought maybe just coming out for the Caulfield Cup, but he's in the Melbourne Cup. You've got the Cox Plate winner, the Cox Plate third, and the third has been the favourite virtually all the way through. Then you've got a horse like Avilius, who was very unlucky in the Caulfield Cup, but has been a wait for age horse for a couple of seasons, now switching back to handicaps, and then you get into the international group. So it really is a staying championship of the world.
Now, Matty, I was listening to you on Monday morning after the Cox play. I disagree with you a little bit. I don't always disagree with you, and with the Melbourne, with the verdict there on Racing Pulse. I think sometimes you go on a little bit too much about the internationals. When you got Surprise Baby and then Very Elegant, that's a New Zealand bred horse that defeated Anthony Van Dyck. But you have the opinion that it's become too hard for us to win our own race.
The reality is it's become a lot harder for us to win our race. It's not my view. It is the reality is that it's become harder. So, I love the internationalisation of the Melbourne Cup. I have no objection to the internationalisation of the Melbourne Cup at all. I think maybe the cost of that has been whether it's a slight or a pronounced slipping away in some ways of the relatability of the race to the local community, and maybe that's just an inevitable thing that will happen when you internationalise a race. So, Lee, I know that this is not a discussion we haven't had over the years, but there is always a juggling act of facilitating the internationals, but making sure you retain the link and the attachment to the local community as well. And that's just an ongoing challenge for every race club and the VRC to make sure they keep the local attachment, but also invite the world in at the same time.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's the balance, but I think Dean said it's the staying championship of the world, so you can't call it that and not have international competition. And gee, Vowan Declare won for Australia last year. You know, you talked about Very Elegant. What about Surprise Baby? Yeah. Trained out of Horsham, got that great local country sort of feel. Well represented, as you said, Avilius. There's lots of Australian. Warning, Finch, he's now an Aussie. Miami Bound, Chosen One, Steel Prince. There's plenty of good Aussie stayers. And I think, I just think the internationals obviously add a bit. I know the locals would probably rather them not here because they've got the race themselves, but I think that's just part of world championships, part of competition, isn't it?
Yep,
whether you're playing golf, tennis, anything else, if you want to be the best, you've got to take on the best.
No, that's right, and I've got no objection to them being here at all. The only thing I comment on is what impact it can have.
I think the storyline of this year's Melbourne Cup Carnival, Dino, is definitely the Horsham Gallop surprise baby. He's a story that can capture the imagination of the Australian public. He's the horse that when you're at the pub, doesn't matter where you are in Australia, you're talking about surprise baby doing it for the Aussies.
Well, that's true, Gareth. He's a bit of a mystery horse as well because we see so little of him. What we've seen of him this spring has been good. He's got last year's Cup-winning rider aboard in Craig Williams, and it's been this low-key build-up. But as you said, it's a relatable story, and from a horse that could have been bought by anyone by very, very moderate amount of money, you could have a Melbourne Cup runner.
Now, I'd love to get your thoughts on this, Lee. Obviously, with your recent role there or your previous role with Racing Victoria as the international scout, and I get this question asked a lot. I know Dino does. It's like trying to work out the best form lines for Melbourne Cup for European Galloper. Do you have any secrets or is there any certain criteria that you like to follow to help out us punters?
Oh, it just depends a bit, Gareth, in that you're obviously looking for a horse that's going to qualify for the race. The York Carnival, the Ebor Festival, has been a good guide over the year, like the Lonsdale Cup. You know, Max Dynamite won. The Ebor itself has been a good race leading in. They're always a good gauge. And I mean, probably taking that line through, and I know he's definitely a character of the turf, is Willie Mullins. I mean, his horse Stratum Albion ran second in the Lonsdale Cup. And it's always a good guide, that race. He's something like 50-1. He could be a good show. But, I mean, against all that, then you've got a horse like Prince of Arran, who's, form in Europe. He just can't get out of his own way half the time. And he comes out here and he just... And that is one trick that some horses definitely do travel better and just perform better when they get away from wherever they are. And that's one of the tricks with travelling. I remember when doing the job is, depends on how they travel and how they settle in. That first 48 hours, 72 hours, if they haven't travelled and recovered, you might as well put a line through them. And that's the key. That really is the key. But form line, obviously the York Festival, what they're doing at Ascot. There's a few races at Goodwood as well. There's some sort of standard races through the season from Ascot through to Goodwood through to York. Mm. They're the sort of main three carnivals you'd be looking at that form line.
Has it expanded a bit, though, because the Dunedin's Protectionists and Americanes weren't part of that circuit as much, were they? No,
that's where France is. They were going through those French races, like a horse like San Huberto has won the Vigor Stakes. That was a race that American Dunedin used to go through. But I've got to say, and hopefully there's not too many French enthusiasts on the listening to the podcast, but the French, especially the staying ranks, have just really dropped away. And I don't know whether they've just maybe... A lot of, I know Willie used to buy out of, probably still does buy out of France. Maybe they're being purchased early doors and going elsewhere, but their staying horses just aren't up to the Dunedins and Americanes that were there. It's been disappointing. It's evolving and things change too and evolve, but French stayers just aren't the same.
The biggest evolution's been the late season Northern Hemisphere 3-year-old lead, when it probably only rekindling whilst you're in the job was one that came to mind. But with Cross Counter and the likelihood of Tiger Moth being a big player on Tuesday, that's been the evolution and it's moving all the time.
No, you're right, Dean. And Aidan brought out a 3-year-old that Stephen Baster rode.
Marler
and ran third. Yeah, and then there was a gap. It was a bit of a gap because Aidan didn't come back for a while after the Septimus saga of 2006. And it was a bit difficult getting him back for a while. But he sort of had the trick back then, but it was just because he went away for a while. As you said, it wasn't until rekindling and then Cross Counter. So can Aidan do probably what he started off to do with a horse like Tiger Moth?
Hey, was it
got very similar profile to rekindling.
Was it an urban myth, or was it, or did Aidan really have a bee in his bonnet after the chief steward Terry Bailey dragged him back to the race course to explain the tactics that year? Did Aidan brush it off, or was he a bit field shy for a little while?
All I could say is when I went and visited him in the July after that happened, I think I've still got the spray stains on my shirt from that visit. So,
well, there you go.
So what did he say to you, Lee?
Oh, he verbalised what he thought of Australian racing to me in a very frank sort of way.
I can't imagine him being, like, swearing.
I don't think there's any swear words in there, but anyway, he did. I think he'd obviously built that all up after 6 months, and I sort of happened to be at the receiving end. But, and then every year it sort of got better and better, and you could see, you know. I did comment to him towards the end that Terry Bailey's left, and he said, oh, I didn't really know he'd left, but I think he knew exactly where Terry was.
I can't imagine that, Dino.
No, well, Lee could have softened him up with a luncheon at the Richmond Seafood Tavern, maybe, but...
Hey, how do you assess the international form, Dino? What's your process?
Case by case. And watching, you know, I mean, you would never have thought that an Epsom Derby winner would be out here in the past, but you've got to assess right to the highest level. We're always sort of looking around the edges, you know, trying to find the ones that linked loosely to the Epsom Derby runners, let alone an Epsom Derby winner. This is why it's evolving every year, and what you look for, and I make notes from a lot further out than I used to. I used to wait till they arrived here, but now I'm making notes from about May.
Do you like to see them in like for like scenarios, Dean? Big fields, tight racing, turning tracks, anything like that? Tempo similar. I can't remember which horse it was. It might have been Rekindling. I think if there was a little knock from some on him was that he'd been running in smallish fields with different sort of tempo, and then he was suddenly thrown into a 24-horse Melbourne Cup. Do you try and marry them into what they're going to encounter?
Yeah, I used to go with that, Matty, but the thing is that we don't race as tight as we used to. The race isn't right. We've morphed into a European style of race. They don't go hard early. They build, and it's a building speed from about a mile out. So we've actually started running the race to their advantage as well. Whereas I think the first few times that they come out after, like a horse like Vintage Crop could handle it, but there are a few in the middle there that, your Oscar Schindlers and co, they couldn't handle that. It was on from the get-go, and jockeys would tell you that down the straight the first time was like riding in an 800-metre race because it was a charge the first turn. You look at it now, and it's very pedestrian. Like on racing.com this week, they highlighted a lovely story of Kingston Rule, and you watch down the straight. They ran the first 900 about the same time they ran the Maribyrnong trial. So it's they flew along, and that's still the record, of course, at 3:16.3. But the race now runs on dry tracks anywhere up to about 3:24. So it's a 7 or 8 7-second difference. So it's totally a race that suits their style of racing even better. And it's amazing how it's morphed into their race. Whilst we're trying to repel them, we're actually giving them more of an advantage.
Why, Dino?
I think
when they've got half the field, they sort of can control the speed a bit sometimes too, can't they?
And we don't have tough, staying horses as such. We run our horses that, in the lead up races they're going like that now, so they don't have series of hard runs like the Caulfield Cup's never run under about 229, 230 anymore. It used to be up 226, 227. So they, even the lead ups aren't as fierce a contest. The only really hard contest in the last few years leading into a Melbourne Cup was the Moonee Valley Cup that Prince of Penzance ran second, and unbelievably came out and won at 100-1, but he'd come off a really hard race.
Your thoughts on all of that, Lee?
Yeah, no, it's interesting what Dean says, and I hadn't sort of really looked at that, but he's right, actually. So, as you said, I'm trying to repel them, but probably maybe falling into their way of the way the race is run. So, that's a good observation, and I hadn't really thought about it that way, but and it's probably right. Seeing the results recently, it makes a lot of sense.
Hey, Dino, the Melbourne Cup, and we'll talk about the popularity and what it means to the Australian people, but it's an international race now, and it's a race that's recognised right across the globe. But as a tipster, and you're the most popular thoroughbred tipster in this country, the Melbourne Cup, what is it like for you, Dino? Is it like your phone running hot? Do you get blown away with the interest of the great race?
Yes and no. Yeah, it's amazing the interest in it, but it's such a, you know, it's such a cultural event, not a sporting event, not a racing event. It's all of the above, and it's you know, just yeah, it's huge. And just having been lucky enough in 2003 to actually own a runner in the race, you know, like I've owned a lot of horses over 30 odd years and had a lot of winners, and my treasured memory is running 10th in the Melbourne Cup. So that shows you the enormity of what the race does, you know, for people that love the sport and people that actually, you know, watch on the day.
What was that like, Dino? Melbourne Cup day.
Tell us a bit of the story, because it is there's kind of a bit to the story, isn't there, with the humble origins and so on?
Yeah, it was a horse called Big Pat, and of course, in 2001, I was a jockey manager at the time for Peter Mertens, and Pete was riding Big Pat, and he won the VRC St. Ledger in the South Australian Derby, and he was well up in the betting for the Cups, and he ran well in the Caulfield Cup, and he ran well in the Moonee Valley Cup, and he was favourite for the Melbourne Cup in 2001 until the rain came, and he drifted a bit on the day. But such was his popularity. It was the year of the federal election, and John Howard went and got photos with Big Pat at Big Pat's Creek Road, Warburton, thinking that might get him some votes. And anyway, Big Pat didn't win that day, and I had nothing to do with him other than being the jockey manager of Peter Mertens. And 18 months went by, and the horse came into form, and he was beaten one day at Moonee Valley. And I was just talking to Peter on the way home from the races, and I said, old horse was a bit plain. He said, yeah, he said, they'll sell him. They're sick of him. I said, what? And I got a bloodstock agent to ring. Cameron Cook rang, and within 24 hours we'd purchased him, and sold him to some friends and a group of people, selling him the dream that would try and get him to the Melbourne Cup. And look, it was all going well. He ran fourth in the Herbert Power, and we thought he'd win the Geelong Cup, and he came up with just a bit of a cold the morning of the race, so we missed out there. So it was the last roll of the dice thing, running him in the Lexus, and he got the money. So we lived the dream for 3 days. I'd hate to have been owning something that's been favourite for 6 months, because 3 days was nerve-wracking enough just to have a runner.
You know what I love about that story, Lee, when you think about horses coming from Newmarket and the Curra and Mount Macedon and all that, the origins of Big Pat was Warburton. And anyone who's ever been to Warburton would know that there's not enough room amongst those hills to train a horse. So it was quite an extraordinary thing.
I know. If you've ever played golf at Warburton, you can only do 9 holes because hills are just massive.
Exactly. Where was he originally trained, given that he was based at Warburton? Did they go to the Yarra Valley?
He was at Warburton, and they had... I actually visited the farm out of curiosity a couple of years later, and, those big hills you talked about, that was his track gallop, and no wonder he was fit and he had miles in his legs, because I don't know how he got back down them, to be honest, but it was... He was remarkable stories by Full and By. I think it was a $500 service fee. The trainer, Peter Tullock, was the trainer. He'd never trained a winner before Big Pat, and I don't think he's ever trained a winner after. It was just his horse, and it was a remarkable tale, and we just got on the tail end of it.
A man named Tullock with a horse called Big
Pat.
Yes,
that's right.
What's your favourite Melbourne Cup story, Matty? We're running out of time already on this Melbourne Cup day.
I think, Lee... The most amazing little experience I had was ghosting Lee Freeburn's column in 2005, and that involved hanging off Lee a fair bit and down at Markdale. And the day between the 3 days, talk about those 3 days, Dean. I'm pretty sure that's when Lee still hadn't publicly revealed that he was going to run in the third cup after winning the Cox Plate. He was worried about the weight. I knew he was going to run. So anyway, we're down at Markdale, and Lee cordoned off the whole property because it was sick of the pressure from the media. There was a pack of media out the front.
Helicopters.
Yeah. There was, I think Tony Jones
got the golf cart on the 11th
at St Andrews Beach private course. And then within a day or two of that, we went down to Safety Beach. And Lee sat on one of those coloured beach boxes. All the media hung back respectfully because Lee was particularly grumpy at that time. Maccabi Diva waited at Safety Beach. Dolphins were swimming beside her. This is all true. Then he went to wash her down with a towel, and a woman walking a dog up the beach. Oh, my God, is that the cup favourite? And Lee gave her the towel, and she ran off yanking this poodle, shrieking that she had, like, the Tom Jones type situation, had the towel for Maccabi Diva.
Her in.
Hey?
The crowd of Turin.
Yes, exactly, basically. And I would imagine that's hanging up in a beard room somewhere down there, Rye.
I remember Lee and Dean talking to Glenn Boss. It might have been this time last year. We talked about that Melbourne Cup experience and the final time that he galloped that horse after that Cox Plate victory. And he said, well, she can't get beat in that Melbourne Cup. She worked that well, Dino.
I was lucky enough to speak to him that morning, and I just said good luck, and he said, this is a runaway train, it can't be stopped. And that was the vision.
They had an early crow drink, Tony Santic and Glenn Boss, the night before, where Glenn Boss said, mate, don't worry, it's all predestined. And then Lee Friedman sat bolt upright in bed at 1 o'clock in the morning because he couldn't sleep because he was trying to think of his acceptance speech.
Okay.
So it survived insurmountable early crows, Dino, basically.
Yeah, she's one of the greats to do all that, Maddie.
And when you look back at Farlap, Lee, that he won a cup, but he lost the cup before, and then after he won the cup, he lost. I know he had to carry a couple of grandstands, but no one's been able to do what she did.
No, that's all I thought you were going to say. I know I look a bit old, Gareth, but I thought you may
have... Yeah, how was the track playing that time?
I've got to say...
Never wears thin, that one.
but I've got to say, look, I'm with the rest. The third Melbourne Cup, Maccabi Diva, was one of the... I was lucky enough to be standing in the middle of the mounting yard. I know a few people may have said this, but when she won and when she's coming back and you looked around and everyone in the grandstand was standing and applauding, I haven't seen that. I don't think... I don't know if you guys have ever seen that, but... I've never seen that, and that was chilling, and it was just very emotional too, and it really was just something I don't think I'll ever see again.
And LJ, the previous year was epic enough, wasn't it? Because it was Vinnie Rowe, and I remember how rainy it was, and the wind was going sideways, and those umbrellas on the lawns were turning into missiles because they were flying around everywhere, and people were ducking. And I remember everyone was under the awnings watching Maccabi Diva, and you could barely see it through the mist when she beat Vinnie Rowe in 2004.
No, you're right. It was a totally different feel. But just, you'll never see it again.
No. A day that everyone won't forget if they were there. And obviously, when you look back at the Melbourne Cup, you think of Maccabi Diva. This is, of course, the VRC Melbourne Cup Carnival podcast. You're with Gareth Hall, Maddie Stewart, Lee Jordan, the great Dean Lester. Let's talk about Oaks Day, and that's on the Thursday. But I think it's a wonderful day, Lee. The race that I look forward to most is the Melbourne Cup Carnival Country Final, which I think it's a terrific new initiative by the VRC. And I love the Zubs, the Grey Race on the Tuesday. The Grey Race is on the Tuesday, isn't it, Lee? Or is it Oaks Day?
No, the Greys is on Oaks Day.
Yeah, the Sub Zero Handicap. So, yep.
Yeah, we've got the No Grey on Cup Day and the Greys on Oaks Day.
We're looking to have a unified society, Lee, and you're just segregating.
Yeah, go on. We might have to revisit that too, man. You're right, be politically correct. But Oaks Day, we're really trying to build Oaks Day, and it's good, Gareth, that you like that race, the Melbourne Cup Country Finals. We're seeing the heats being run for $100,000 throughout the country, and I've been watching the races, and they've been really fascinating races, and we'll get a full field again on Oaks Day because you're racing for $500,000 in a benchmark 80. So it's a great race. And I remember the last 2 years watching it. It's because obviously it brings all these country horses from around the state here, brings all the connections. Obviously they won't be here, unfortunately, but it really's got a great atmosphere, and it's a great betting race as well. We've also put a new race on there. We've got a relationship now with Inglis. Inglis are great supporters of the club, and we've got a three-year-old fillies and mares race over a mile with $250,000. Obviously, for the fillies and mares have gone through the Inglis sale, so that's a new addition. And we brought over the Ottawa Stakes. We swapped it with the Maribyrnong to put the two-year-old fillies race over. So we just want to keep building. Oaks Day, and I think it's got potential to sort of just keep growing. We obviously had a twilight meeting last year with obviously no crowd here this year. It's not finishing as late, but that's not off the table, the twilight. Obviously, with the crowds back, I think we'll revert back to that format next year.
Yeah, that's. I'm glad you touched on that because I think the other factors like the weather and all that didn't give us anyone a proper sample of whether that was going to work or not. So interested that you say that it, because I think a lot of people thought that it was a great idea to bring it out of the other 3 days as a point of difference and maybe even attract a different audience and maybe even uni students and so on. And so that is still...
I agree. I don't think we've given... I thought it was a success last year. Turnover was up. Our crowd was... remember the day was a... Oh, it was a cold. It was a really
terrible day.
That was the worst thing. It was a freezing day, yeah. But our turnover was up. And the crowd, it was too hard to tell because the weather was that bad. We did have a bad go with the weather last year, but I think it's definitely worthwhile having... having another go with it next year. And I know we've just, you know, adjusted it for this year, but don't worry, we'll go back to it next year. And I think it's a day we can definitely grow.
One thing that I think I've broached with you before, that it seems an anomaly to me. I don't know whether it needs to be fixed or not, because I think the 1200 metre circuit's more popular than the 1400, but there's no 1400 metre open class Group 1 feature race at Flemington. You mentioned the distance spectrum before of 1012, 1416. Is there any room to fill that void with something, the 1400 metres as a big Group 1?
Well, we have the Chatham, the Group 3 on the final day over 1400. If you remember, it used to be the old Yalambie that used to be on Derby Day, and then horses would run in that and then, you know, back up again in the mile on the final day. But now with the mile on Derby Day, maybe the Chatham's a race that we could try and develop, you know, putting a bit more prize money in and try and develop it. That would be the race on the 4 days that stands out that could be. But, wouldn't it be great to have, you know, Group 1s at all, you know, all distances that we run? But it is difficult. But, no, it's I think the Chatham, we can try and definitely grow that, Matty.
Hey, Dino, do you like the Twilight? The Twilight Zone, obviously, it's not happening this year, but did you enjoy last year?
Yes. Yeah, I've got no problem with that. I think that's a good idea. And, I like a couple of the changes going forward this year. And, you know, as Lee said, with the Mayor's Race that was 1700 on the Tuesday, now being on the Thursday, and with the association with Inglis, it brings it up to a really good prize money race. And, I think, Lee, with running the three-year-old race over 1800 on Cup Day, in recent years we've seen Vow and Declare and Russian Camelot, it might give, when race goers are back on course, a little view to what they might see 12 months down the track.
And, Dean, that was the idea. I mean, Vow and Declare, and you mentioned Russian Camelot in that race. And I mentioned before about Confrontational, the Geelong Classic, when it hadn't paid up, so unfortunately couldn't go to the Derby. But that's in that race on Tuesday. And, yeah, sort of like run that race. Here's a bit of a preview of, you know, one of our future staying championships, and then also then watch the Cup. So that was sort of the idea. So hopefully that can work. And I think that race, yeah, it seems to be producing some good horses.
So we've had the Amy Victoria Derby Day, then the Lexus Melbourne Cup Day, the Kennedy Oaks Day, and then the Sepulwine Stakes Day. Is the final day of the carnival, and it's a ripper day too. When you have a look at the races on the final day, the Queen Elizabeth Stakes, the Darley Sprint Classic. You've got the Chatham Stakes, the McKinnon Stakes as well. It's nearly the perfect ending, Len. You, and, of course, the Darley Sprint. This is a day that you think that could get better over the years as well?
Yeah, I do, Gareth. And one thing we've introduced on this day is another grand handicap. They're really good competitive races. Last year, we introduced a grand handicap, the sprint. We ran it as the last race. You probably remember Full Field, really competitive race. So on the day, we've now got a benchmark. We've got a grand handicap over 2,000. So, you know, with the Country Carnival on the Oaks Day over a mile, then the final day, we've got the grand handicap over 2,000 and sprint. It's sort of like we've got a bit of a country championship going on the last 2 days. So that sort of strengthen the last day a little bit. But as we said before, obviously that the Darley Sprint, hopefully we'll, you know, see a lot of the horses out of the Everest coming in there, and maybe some additional horses along the way. So that looks like going to be a great race, you know, with Bivouac, and we're probably still to wait and hear whether Nature Strip will run. And, you know, Zutori is a straight track specialist, and we talked at the start of the show about the McKinnon. you know, it could be the race of the spring. So we really want to, you know, develop that final day, and I think it's sort of heading in the right direction. So in general, over the carnival, we've got 37 races. Mm. We've got 26 black type, and our aim is to have every race either being a black type race or it's a final. It's a grand handicap or it's the final of a series. It's a feature. So that when you come to the whole 4 days, every race, as I said, is a black type or a final or a feature.
Lee, my personal view is that final day is the best day of the four. I think it's evolved in a way where with the McKinnon and the Darley, I kind of think those peaks are almost higher than the peaks on Derby Day, and I think that's fantastic. But what a contrast to years ago. Like, I remember 25, 30 years ago when you drove into final day, Lee, that's when they were packing up a lot of the marquees because they just weren't going to be used, were they? I don't know whether you have the same memories or Dean, but I remember driving into a few of those days and some of the big marquees were actually being taken down on the morning of Darley Stakes Day. It tells you a lot about how it's evolved.
Yeah, no, Matty, it's at the opposite now. The marquees are all up, well, not up at the moment, but when we've got full crowds, no, they're up. And the last day, I think one thing we were looking at too, it was sort of, you know, after Cup and after Oaks, it was dropping off a bit. So I think we need to do something sort of make sure that the last day held the interest, not just, you know, from a racing aspect, which it definitely has, but also from interest and public coming along. And really now, as you've just said before, I mean, final day, you know, if you miss out on going Derby Day, gee, why wouldn't you go final day? It's just fantastic racing. So that's the trick to really develop and have a quality racing event right across the 4 days.
Dean, do you think final day is biting on the heels of Derby Day?
Oh, it's a really good day, Matty. It's very diverse, and I know that Lee's had a real passion for these grand handicaps going forward, and they're really coming to fruition. So, you know, it's a terrific meeting, yeah, but, you know, and rounded off well. But, yeah, certainly the McKinnon as a Group 1 contest is a higher quality than the Cantala. But in saying that, the Cantala being a handicap creates a lot of interest. So they've swapped around, and it probably, as we spoke about earlier, it works for the better.
Boys, we nearly run out of time here for the VRC Melbourne Cup Carnival Preview podcast. It's been a lot of fun. And you know what? I could sit here all day and listen to you lads talk about this wonderful carnival. It'll be different. There's no doubt about that. We all know that in 2020. Don't forget to the VRC. Lee, you've got a website dedicated for Cup Week this year. It's cupweek2020.com.au. If you head to that website, you can join a lot of activities. So they're trying to bring the VRC, even though that we can't get there, bring it to your own homes and backyard so we can enjoy the day a little and enjoy the Cup Week Carnival a little differently.
Yeah, no, it's good, Gareth. And, yeah, get on that website. And, look, thanks for having me. So it's great. And good luck to you, Gareth. Love your work. And keep punching along there. Maddie as well and Dean. Hopefully you're tipping plenty of winners over the week. And look forward to catching up with you all when we can actually see each other face-to-face and have a beer.
And don't forget you can listen to the Spring Ticket and Cup Week Radio throughout Cup Week. So I had a lot of fun doing that broadcast last year. And we'll be back to do it all again this year. Hey, Lee, have you got a special for us during Cup Week? One horse that you think that we should have a bet on?
Okay. Look, I love Surprise Baby, but we'll stick with the Cup. But why don't we have a little bit of a go on Strata and Albion at any old price? Willie Mullins.
Okay.
Just for a bit of fun.
All right.
Geordie Childs. What Geordie a lovely Childs. Story that'd be.
Beats Surprise Baby by a nose in the Cup.
Could be the Quinella.
I know, Dino, that you've got a lot of form, and I feel for you. This is the toughest week for any form analyst, but especially if you're Dean Lester. Have you got any early thoughts, Dino, that you can give us? We can listen to you throughout the week on RSN 927, and of course, we can go to your website as well. Dean Lester, is it donk.com.au as well?
Yeah, greattipoff.com/Dean Lester, yes.
Okay.
Gareth, look, I always hope to get a flying start Derby Day because, you know, that's sets up the week, and I'm hoping that Mystic Journey sets up my week. I think she will win the Empire Rose and set up the week nicely for us.
Maddie Stewart, dare I ask?
Honestly, I don't have a firm... I reckon it's going to be an amazing Melbourne Cup. It really is. But I don't have a firm Cup Week thought at this moment. I'm going to let it all...
All right, then.
I have had an early one on Wertheimer to win the derby, and I'm hoping.
Lee Jordan.
I can give you one good tip is go to that Flemington website and get involved in the food hampers. Got one on Turnbull Stakes Day. Absolutely. Makes you feel like you're a little bit at the races. They're great dining. There's a whole heap of different packages. So get on that Flemington website. Get involved. It's terrific. I've ordered all mine for the Cup Week.
All right, then.
The job for Dean in the marketing department.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Hey, do we have to do it on the website, Lee, or is there a little something for your radio mates
Maddie,
here?
Maddie, pay. Just pay.
Hey, Dean. Sausage roll on the side there, Maddie.
And that's the best Sweet. Push because Dino knows food like he knows his horses.
That's it. Lee's taught me well.
Yeah. Good on you, Dean. Hey, Dean, it's been a lot of fun. I know you're busy, mate, so we appreciate you coming on and joining us for the Melbourne Cup Carnival Preview Podcast. Good luck next week.
Terrific. Thank you, Gareth.
Hey, Lee Jordan, you're a star, mate. Well done.
Thanks, Gareth. Appreciate it.
And I can't wait to read your work over the Cup Carnival, Maddie, and listen to you, of course, on Cup Week Radio.
It's going to be a busy week, but it's going to be a great week, guys. Looking forward to it.
Maddie Stewart there. I'm Gareth Hall, and thanks for your company on the 2020 VRC Melbourne Cup Carnival Preview Podcast. Back plenty of winners at this magical carnival during this big week there at Flemington.